This is the Post America Podcast.
That's right, motherfucker. What the fuck you know about podcasting? This is our shit. Post America. Macho Black, Richie Crutch, Chrissy the Baboon. Post America Podcast, son. Download that shit, motherfucker.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It's Richie from the Post America Podcast. We're back. It's been a few months since we released some stuff, but we've been busy. You see all the stuff going on. But we came back strong because we got a special guest. We got Paul Bearer from Sheer Terror. How you doing, Paul?
Good, good, good. What's going on? How you been?
Not bad, not bad. I got to see you a few weeks back at the in Reading.
Yeah,
you guys,
it was a fun show.
Yeah, it was fun, and you guys sounded great, man. I told you that already.
What did you guys? You guys did a good job. It's a Blood for Blood song.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd jump up there and sing a little bit, but, you know.
I don't know any of the words.
Yeah, you can just growl. You growl a little bit.
I can say, fuck you a lot.
Yeah, that's half the lyrics right there. But, no, that was a good time. But you know what I was thinking when I was there? I was like, man, I'd love to get Paul on the show. He's an interesting guy. You know, good music, years in the game, and then now I got you. So I got lucky.
Yeah, fuck it, bro.
Let me take you back from, like, where exactly did you grow up at?
I was born in Staten Island, New York. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for a good, like, my early years when I was little. We moved to Rhode Island, and I was in the third grade, I think. Fourth grade, I forget. And we moved to Rhode Island for about a year or so. My father got a job with General Dynamics. My father was an electrician. Mm. And we were up there for about a year or so. He was on a contract job. And then we moved to Yonkers. And Yonkers, we were there for a good, 6 years or so. And then my family wound up moving back to Staten Island. And they're still out there, whoever's left. And I went back, and then I started moving out around on my own and whatnot. So, yeah, Staten Island, New York's where I was born and raised, and we wound up returning. But Yankees was where my teenage years, really. And that's where I where everything started to go wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Yonkers, for those that don't know, that's like right outside of the Bronx, like right.
Yeah, right above the Bronx.
Right above the Bronx. My Union Hall's in the Bronx. You know Katona Avenue in the Bronx?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's where my local is. Local 18A, cement concrete, baby.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. So I like that's an Irish, heavy Irish area, Katona
Avenue. Oh yeah, big time. My father grew up in the South Bronx, and when there was a Polish enclave out there, a long, long, long time ago.
Yeah, are you Polish?
I'm half Polish. I'm Polish, Italian, and Spanish.
All right, you got a little bit of good things in there.
New York, but
yeah, and that's a beauty of New York. You get some wild mixes. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Big time, big time.
So you say in Yonkers is where you went? You went you're joking. That's where you went wrong. But is that where you started getting into music, or what? When was like that trigger?
Well, I was always, like, when I was a kid, I always loved music, even, like, when I was really little and whatnot. And, either from the radio or, my brother's records or whatnot. Not so much my sister's records. She was more into, like, the poppier type, teeny bopper shit. Mm. But my brother, he had, like, Black Sabbath records laying around and Alice Cooper records and stuff like that. Mata Hoople, Slade. And, and some of them records, records of Alice Cooper and the Black Sabbath records, those covers used to scare the shit out of me. Sabbath, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. That record used to scare me just looking at the cover.
That's true, man. That's true.
So, like, I would listen to them here and there when he wasn't around or whatever. Or he would play it. He was also really into, like, early Springsteen and whatnot, which I didn't really get to appreciate till much later in life. Bowie, David Bowie, big time. Stuff like that. And, I would listen to his stuff here and there. And then, when I was really young, I guess, I got into Kiss, like most, kids there back then or whatever. in the early mid 70s or whatever. And I really had a case of Cheap Trick I liked, and I always remained an Alice Cooper fan. But then around 78 and whatnot, when the punk thing started happening in New York, you'd see it on the papers, you'd see it on the news sometimes or on TV. And that always struck my interest, not so much for the music at first, but because I was like, why do people hate this shit so much? Like, it was hate. People were, like, talking shit on, punk sucks, fuck, all these people are disgusting, all this crap. And it intrigued me, you know? And then when the whole thing happened with Sid Vicious, they were, you know, stabbing his girlfriend or allegedly or whatever, I think at the Chelsea Hotel, when that happened, that was in New York, and it was all in the papers, and I was like, whoa, this shit's crazy. What's going on here? So I really started following it. And then I went to, I think it was about like 79 or 1980. Yeah, 1979, early 1980. I don't remember exactly. I went to the library, and they had Nevermind the Bollocks on cassette, and I stole it because I didn't have the money to buy that. So I stole a cassette, the Sex Pistols album, and it was just, Kiss never stood a chance after that.
After that, like, that was it, huh?
Yeah, it's like, goodbye, you know? And I just started buying and, you know.
So whatever, what age are you on that when you got fully into the punk stuff?
When I started, I was like 12.
Okay, cool.
I was like 12 years old. I mean, I didn't start going to shows until I was like 13 or whatever. But I was 12 years old, and I just got into it, and I loved it. I thought it was fucking great. And I love the music. I love the aggression, the attitude, and I love that the people hated it.
Yeah. Okay. That, I can see that in your personality. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. People hated it, and I wanted to be hated. I was like, "Fuck you! This is for me.
That's so and, dope. That's
cool. You know, shit like that. The Stranglers, one of my favorite bands. Getting to, I remember.
What a great name, the Stranglers. Wow.
Stranglers, yeah, one of the best. If you can even call them punk, they were beyond punk, really. But they get up to the early punk stuff. There was this compilation called Ride the Wave or Catch a Wave. I forget what it was called, right? It was like a compilation. I think A&M Records put it out. And the cover, it was like, you know, the typical, like, you know, it was like it was like a leopard print, and it had a guy, a punk rock guy, like he was surfing on an ironing board, you know. And it was like colored vinyl, the whole bit, blah, blah, blah. It was like all the bands that were on A&M. It had the Dickies on it, the Stranglers, Squeeze, some other shit too. I forget what exactly, but it had a song by the Stranglers called "Bring On the Nubiles." And the chorus of the song is like, crazy for you, crazy. And he's just going, Lemmy, fuck you, Lemmy, fuck you, fuck you.
Wow, yeah. That's
and
awesome.
I remember, I'm listening, and I didn't know what a nubile was, and I didn't know it meant an innocent young girl. Or I had no idea what a nubile was, you know? So I'm listening, I just remember listening to that record before I bought a Strangers record, listening to the songs or whatever, and my mother coming through my door. My bedroom will go, are you out of your fucking mind?
Wow. And this is all while you're in Yonkers at this point?
Yeah, I was in Yonkers. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in junior high school. Junior high is when I really started getting to punk.
So in 13, when you started going to shows, you were going from Yonkers to the shows?
Yeah. I was going from Yonkers. I was sneaking out. Sometimes I'd get a ride with somebody I knew if they were driving in. Not too many people going to punk, but I met a couple of older guys who I started my first band with and stuff. They lived in New Rochelle and whatever.
Okay, yeah, New Rochelle. What was your first band?
First band we ever had was called Social Security, and they were already a band up there, but they never really did nothing. I think they played maybe two shows.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but nobody knew who they were. And then I started singing for them. I was 13. And that it was going nowhere. We practiced a lot. It was going nowhere. But then the guitarist, Josh, had another outfit going with drummer Gene, John and George were singing. And George, and they were more. The bass player, the drummer, blue eyed jazz guys. They were like totally like all like they were like, you know, like they were like 19, 20, 21, whatever. Mm. And they were all the jazz. They were all the jazz heads and stuff like that. But they liked the hardcore stuff. They liked the Dead Kennedys. They liked like the speed and the energy of it and shit. And they loved the Bad Brains and everything because of the timings and stuff like that and the instrumentalism, whatever. And they just got into the hardcore stuff. But they were doing like more like fast and stuff that I liked, whatever. When it was Social Security, it was more like punkish. And I started singing backup with them. There was like two singers. George sang lead, and then I would sing like on the choruses and stuff like that. And sometimes we would trade back and forth. Those guys, they taught me timing, pretty much. Mm-hmm. They taught me timing, thanks for doing the whole jazz background and stuff. We played two shows. We played the A7 in 82, and then we played the A7 Annex a couple of months later.
What was the name of that one?
The name of that band was Fathead Suburbia.
Fathead Suburbia. Okay, I heard about that.
Yeah.
You know who told me about that? Craig from Sick of It All.
We recorded a four-song demo. I sing on the first song in the chorus. We never did nothing with it. And then those guys, you know, they were older, doing like, you know, late teens, early 20s. They had their own things going on and whatnot. And we just did the two shows. And like, we always come to contact with Josh, the guitarist. Me and him were always hanging out. Like, he'd drive me to the city. We were always going to shows and stuff like that, here and there, whatever. And like, he's still my friend to this day.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, they were like blue-eyed jazz guys. They told me timing. They turned me on to all the jazz shit, like Max Roach, stuff like that. I can't even think of it.
Now, what kind of vocals did you do in that band? Was it similar to Sheer Terror?
No. Yeah, like screaming hard, early screaming hardcore thing. I was 13, 14 years old, so.
Got you. To me, like, Sheer Terror is like one of, like, the pioneer of this sort of vocal that became like the standard, like the lower, more guttural vocal, except Sheer Terror has like it's melodic at the same time. You know what I mean?
I bit that over like Cal from Discharge and everything like that. Because then there was Cal, then Discharge in the early 80s. And I took a lot of my vocal things from Cal from Discharge. Because they were brutal. They were fucking brutal. They're still a great band to this day. But they were fucking brutal. Like, when I first heard them, I was like, holy fucking shit. They was like, you know, people talking about Game Changer. They were a fucking game changer. And, like, between them, Lemmy from Motorhead, of course. You know, Motorhead, I mean. If you don't like Motorhead, I don't want to know you, as far as I'm concerned. Bottom line. You don't like Motorhead, you got problems.
It's anthem after anthem with Motorhead.
It's just Motorhead. It's like they bring, you know, that's the one band that brings everybody together. Yeah. Even in England, over here, they brought the punk rockers together with the long hairs, with the skid eggs, with the this, with the that. Come on. It's fucking Motorhead. It's rock and roll. And they were fucking, you know, I love Motorhead. And that's why I met very few people who don't like Motorhead. And every time I did, I just like walked away from it. I was like, I don't want to know you. You're just a dick.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know anybody that dislikes Motorhead. You know, I know some people that love them, like, you know, over the top. But everybody at least likes them. I mean, they got the songs. They got the image. The whole vibe, like,
everything,
you know,
Motorhead, you know what I mean? It's like, come on. I mean, I remember when I was at CBGB's. It was the day after a big show. I don't remember exactly who played the day before, but I went the next day because there was this band from Boston called Psycho. And this is when the early version of Psycho, they turned into a grindcore kind of band. But they were originally more like a punk type band. And they were playing a matinee the next at CBGB's, opening up for them was Rosemary's Babies from Jersey, and that was Erie Vaughn, who was later in with Danzig, the first bass player in Danzig. He was playing drums in that band, and they were terrible. They were fucking god awful, and I remember Glenn was there. Glenn Danzig. Well, Glenn was a cool guy back then in the '80s.
Yeah.
You'd see him and show up and talk to him and talk about horror movies and stuff like that. He was really cool. He was really cool to the kids back then.
So he was a little older then. He was like older.
Oh, yeah, no, he was much older. He was much older than me and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. But he was very, very, very affable, very cool guy. He'd go up to Twitter about the new horror movies that came. I can't you can't say hell yeah, yeah, that was great. That's what seemed about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was really cool. And he was there, and yeah, there was like maybe you're lucky there was 20 people in the club, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the singer was like this kind of like jockey kind of looked like a skinner, but he wasn't a skinner kind of guy. I mean, just a jockey fucking boy, douche. And I remember I was talking to Glenn at the bar. I was standing there. Which, I don't know what we were playing, horror movies, some shit or whatever. I don't know. And you know, I'm a kid. I'm 14 or whatever the fuck I am. 15. I don't know. And I had a Motorhead pin on my jacket. And the singer from Rosemary's Babies, remember it so vividly. He's like looking at my pin. And I look at him, I'm like, oh, you like Motorhead? He's like, nah. And I just like looked at him like, oh, man, like, you're a dick. I was like, get the fuck away from me.
That's wild, dude. Rosemary Baby, that name sounds familiar, though. I think I've seen that on flyers and shit.
Well, they played a couple of shows. I thought it was in a movie, Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, of course.
But they put out a 70s. They were terrible. They were really fucking bad.
What were the bands that were making waves around that time when you're like 14, 15?
Oh,
in New York.
From New York or coming through?
Yeah, in New York.
Oh.
Were you listening to any of that stuff, the local stuff at the time?
Yeah, of course you had the Bad Brains because they moved into town from D.C. So they were always there. And like,
now,
and
what you say about Motorhead, a lot of people say about the Bad Brains, and I'm kind of guilty of not being a Bad Brains fan. Like, I don't really get it. Like,
I, you know what? They were a great band in their day. They were. Yeah. And I haven't seen the last time I saw them was 1985 when they did the two shows at the Old Rock Hotel on Jane Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great. And that's how I want to remember them. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
That's
gotcha.
How I want to remember when they were still in their fucking party. They were still great.
Yeah,
and they were great live, and he was running around doing his bit, and they were a fantastic live band. They were a great band, and I just got tired of it. I got tired of everybody kissing their ass, and I just started to see the slope, like so the slippery slope there. They just started, sliding downwards or whatever, and everybody still kissing their ass, and I just was like, I'm over it. But you know, early '80s, they were untouchable. They really were. And I saw them a whole shitload of times back in the day, and they never disappointed. They were always great. But then after a while, they always threatened to break up. And these are the last shows. I don't know how many fucking last shows I saw the Bad Brains between 1981 and 1983.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. I think that must have been what it was, that they were like the live band, you know, and I just missed.
Live, they were phenomenal. You know, and the record, they were on record, they were okay. Yeah. And some of them, like, you know, I mean, the first tape is debatable, but when it came out, you had something to bring home and listen to. So of course everybody loved it. But live, they couldn't be touched. They couldn't. They were something to be reckoned with. And you know, I'll never take that away from them. But that's why I've never seen them after that, because I saw the slope happening, and then everybody keep going, oh, they're still great. They're still great. No, they're not. I'm sorry. You know, it's not that the musicianship might be there. Don't get me wrong. They're great players and shit. I'm not going to say they're not. But HR, he gave up a long time ago. You know? Whether it was because the brain tumor, supposedly, or this or that, or the other thing, drugs, I have no fucking idea. But he gave up a long time ago. So it's like, why am I going to go and give this guy money when he don't want to be here?
Yeah, makes sense.
You know?
But they were definitely the standout in New York then, though.
Oh, yeah. When they first came in, I mean, they would come up to New York here and there. I didn't really see them. At least, I don't think I saw them when they still did D.C. I don't really remember. I just always remember them being around in New York.
Yeah.
And they moved up to New York. So, Bad Brains, The Mob, even though they were touch and go, but they would sometimes live. But The Mob was doing good. Crucial Truth, I loved.
Mm.
And the Nihilistics from Long Island, I loved because they hated everything. Everybody hated them, and they hated them. Right? Everybody.
Yeah, they had like a wild reputation, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
the Nihilistics.
They were just very honest, and they tell you to go fuck yourselves.
Yeah.
But very intelligent, very well-read people,
mm.
You know, as opposed to, well, a lot of others. But, you know, stuff like that. There were some good bands out in New York, but some I didn't really care for. Like Reagan Youth, a lot of people loved them. But I thought they were okay. I never really dug them so much.
Yeah.
Urban Waste were great when a 7-inch first came out. They were hot as shit, and then they petered out due to drugs or booze or whatever. Major Conflict was a great band there for a while. I mean, there were a lot of really good bands. And, but then they just all, whatever, shit the bed or, I don't know.
So to you as a young guy, what were you more excited for? Were you excited for the New York bands or the bands that were passing through? And if it was bands passing through, like who had the excitement that people wanted
bands
to see? Bands
passing through, mostly, I mean, except for like the Nihilistics, you know, because I would always go see them. They were my friends as well. I would go see Urban Waste, The Abused. I would go see, you know, they were another great band out of New York, but they only played really, in all honesty, a handful of shows. Mm. You know, they didn't really play out a lot. And but they were great, and that 7-inch was fucking great. Agnostic Front, you know, when they started, they were fucking awful. I thought they were terrible. And even when United Blood came out, I thought that was a terrible record.
Nice.
I was like, yeah. I was like, whatever. It's sloppy and all that. I was like, I'm not digging it.
Yeah.
And when it's all Victim in Pain, I was like, oh, these guys are finally writing songs that are cohesive and whatever.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, okay, they're good. Finally. It took them a while.
Yeah.
You know? And it's well, that's the whole thing with me and Vinny. Me and Vinny go back.
Yeah,
in more ways than one. I mean, besides he had a band called the Eliminators.
Yeah, okay.
But then he played bass, and they were like hardcore punk. They were punky, kind of hardcore, whatever. This guy Kevin sang, played guitar, and they were looking for a singer. And they rehearsed somewhere out in fucking Long Island City. Anyway, they were looking for a new singer, and I was like 13 years old. I was like, I'll try it out. And I went out to this place out of Long Island. I couldn't even fucking tell you where the hell this place was to this day. But I got out there to a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Rehearsed with them once. And it wasn't a very long rehearsal. And they're like, okay, well, we'll talk to you. You know, we'll let you know what's going on. Blah, blah, blah. And a couple of weeks passed. And then it's like winter time, I remember. And I go down to 87 for some show. And Vinny's there. So I'm like, Vinny. I was like, yeah. I'm like, Paul, well, I might try it out for you guys. Everything. He's like, oh, yeah. We broke up.
Oh, my God.
So I was like, oh, okay.
How did it go to try out, though, in your opinion?
I mean, as good as it could, I guess. I don't really remember. I mean, I was, like I said, 13. I mean, I guess it went all right. You know what I mean? It wasn't like they were.
That's pretty cool, though, like that. I never knew that story.
It gets even more ridiculous.
Oh, shit. What happened?
Okay, so I'm reading this interview with Vinny, and he's talking about stuff that he did before he got into punk rock and everything like that. You know, bands he played in.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I'm reading it, and then he says, so there's a little bit of Future Shock. I'm like, Future Shock? Future Shock?
What's that, the name of a band or something?
That was the name of a band that he played in.
Okay.
I'm like, Future Shock. So, had to be 1976, 77. I don't know what the hell. I forget. I don't remember exactly the year.
Jeez, that's going back.
Yeah. On Tar G Street in Stapleton in Staten Island, down the block from where I grew up, my Uncle Vinny and my Aunt Mary lived there, you know?
Yeah.
And in the backyard, they were having a party. Like, it was like a Labor Day or something like that, you know? Memorial Day, literally some sort of you know, weekend holiday thing. Everybody had a Monday off. So they had a big backyard party. They had a couple of bands playing. One of them was called Future Shock.
Get the fuck out of here.
And I had to be eight, 9 years old. And I remember watching them. And I'm looking, and they did all kind of covers. Suffragette City, did Rolling Stones songs. It was all cover songs, pretty much.
Yeah.
And from what I can remember, anyway. I remember Suffragette City vividly. And I remember, and then when I look at that, so I go to Vin. I go to Vin, I'm like, Vinny. I'm like, did the singer of your band, I was like, did you guys used to do Suffragette City or something like that? I was like, yeah, I hated that song. I was like, did the singer of your band have like shaggy but dark like Rod Stewart-y kind of hair and a big nose? And he's like, yeah, the Jew. So I'm like, I fucking saw Vinny Stigma in one of his first bands when I was like 9 years old, playing in my Aunt Vinny, my Uncle Vinny and Aunt Mary's backyard.
That's incredible. And what was the name of the band? Aftershock?
Future Shock.
Wow.
That's fucking crazy, right?
And you think that was like 1978? 79?
Maybe, yeah, 77, 78. Maybe.
Wow.
I was a little kid.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Fucking crazy.
yeah, Vinny was in some. I never heard of that one though. I heard of some of his other bands. I never heard of that one.
Future. They were total like a cover band, rock and roll, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember. And then I sort of kind of remember him kind of sort of when I saw that a picture of the band. Then somebody dug up a picture of the band. Mm. And I looked at it, I was like, yeah, okay. I remember, you know, he had longer hair and it was like they got bell bottoms on and you know, sneakers and shit, you know?
That's awesome. Jesus.
Yeah, that's crazy. So yeah, no, me and Vinny go way back.
Yeah, fuck, that's insane. And just you trying out for the Eliminators, that's fucking dope.
Yeah, exactly. And then that would happen like maybe 4 or 5 years later. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
So when does Sheer Terror officially get kicked off?
Blake, the original guitarist, he was in a band called No Control. They were like a New York hardcore, like a punk band more really. They had a female singer, female bass player. And they were more like early hardcore, but more like a punk edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were breaking up and Blake wanted to do something different or whatever. Like a lot of like the early Sheer Terror songs were actually just, they were just No Control songs. I just changed the lyrics.
Oh, okay.
So, he just wanted to do something a little heavier or whatnot. And that we did our first rehearsals and whatnot. I tried out and we started practicing. And Blake came up with the name Sheer Terror from watching the news or some movie. And that was December of 1984.
Okay. I was going to ask you how that name came up.
Yeah, he sort of like, he was like, why are you either watching the news or some movie? And somebody said, Sheer Terror.
It's a hard
name. I like that. And that's what came. Everybody was like, oh, did you get that? Everybody thinks we stole it from the government issue song. I was like, no.
Mm.
We did that.
No, it's a hard name.
So, yeah, that's what I came. Yeah, December of 84. And we played our first show in February of 85, 2 months later.
So how old are you at that point?
I was 16 when I tried out and was playing with it, and then I turned 17 on January 12th. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing, man? Like you like that's
you know what though, but
that's so fucking cool, man.
That's the way it was though, in a way. Yeah. Like back then, especially when you got into if we come from the punk thing and you got into the hardcore thing and you see it, I'm not gonna be wrong, I was in a band with like a lot of there was always a lot of older guys around too.
Yeah.
We're also a lot of young kids. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, and you start seeing these bands and you go into these clubs, you know, the ones that would let you in anyway, and the bands are right there. And then you could talk to them afterwards. You're hanging out afterwards or whatever you're doing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, it wasn't like I could never do this. It wasn't like going to see a band in Madison Square Garden or some shit like that. Like, that'll never be me. It was more like, well, I could do that. I could try that out.
Yeah.
Because it was right there, you know? And it was easy because there were a whole bunch of other kids around you or other people around you, whether they be kids. I mean, everybody was a kid back then, really, when they're older than you or younger, you know, who wanted to do it as well. So, you know, it was very
easy. Who do you remember in that age bracket back then that might still be around that we might know?
I remember, like, whoever's around. Like, of course, I remember Vinny. I remember Jimmy. I remember Harley. You know.
Now they're all Vinny's definitely older, right?
Vinny's older. Vinny's older. Jimmy's a couple of years older than me. I think me and Harley are the same age.
Okay.
if I'm not mistaken. Like I remember all those guys; they were always around. But those guys, they lived in the city, or they lived closer, or moved into squats and stuff. I never wanted to live in a squat. My mother was a great cook, and I love my and you know my family loved me. So I had no reason to go live into a squat. I'll take the fucking bus to the train, and I'll come in.
Vinny's family actually lived down there, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. He lived a couple of blocks away, so like you know.
Yeah, but the other ones were kind of like almost like stray cats or some shit. It seems.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of guys they would go down there, they'd find their way, and some of them got lost along the way, and whatever. Mm. But like you know, I never wanted to live in a squat, and like I was very antisocial too when I was young, and I had very bad skin, and I didn't really like having my picture taken because of that, and I kind of shied away from people. I kept going to shows and hanging out and trying to do stuff and everything like that, but I wasn't hanging, I wasn't drinking, I was straight edge when I was a kid.
Get out of here!
We got about bands nice. Coming through. Bands that were coming through. Minor Threat and SSD. I loved them.
Oh, wow.
Loved them. Saw the Minor Threat probably 5-6 times. And every time I came to New York, I think that was 5 times or whatever. Whatever it was. Either way.
Yeah.
So I loved them and shit like that. But so I was straight. I was a kid. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I didn't like any of that stuff. So, like, you know, but I put the X on my hand, but I'd write hate in it. HATE instead of NYHC.
Hard. That's hard. So did any kind of like a straight edge style lyrics ever leak into the early Sheer Terror stuff or not?
No, by then I was drinking and heartbroken.
Oh, God. Is that what set it off, a heartbreak? What changed? Yeah, what was the changing point?
Yeah, kind of sort of. I mean, when I was young, yeah. I mean, of course, I tried beer or I tried pot, you know, when I was really, really young. But I didn't really care. I didn't do anything. And the straight edge thing happened, and I loved the bands and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I don't like drinking, and I can't afford or I'm not old enough to do any of this stuff anyway. So it was very easy for me to be straight edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, then when I putting too fine of a point on it, or going too long of a story. Now, the first girl that I met, I was 17. It was at the Rock Hotel. She was about 6 years older than me.
Ooh.
I lost my virginity to her that night. And
my man.
Yeah, we started, and she turned me on to drinking. And then about a year or so later, she went to England and died of a drug overdose.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. That was fun.
That is a heartbreaker.
Yeah, that was about. I had no business. Of course, you know, I'm in love. I'm falling in love with her. She's trying to get rid of me, like trying to save me for myself.
Yeah.
But she tried to. She was like, I got to, you know, this kid. I can't, you know, this kid. But I was too young to realize that.
Mm.
You know, my heart's getting broken. But she's like trying to save me for myself. She tried to shake me, and she was always in the city, and. You know, whatever, and I found like in a place that she was staying at, and people should stay. And I used to go into the city and look for her, and like that, you know, I'd walk around the Lower East Side back then. I had no business walking around, and I had like a big fucking hunting knife, like strapped to my foot, literally strapped to my boot.
Wow.
And just walking around, hoping I bump into this girl. Meanwhile, I'm putting my life on the fucking line, walking through these neighborhoods at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow, you were in love, bro. You were in love.
Yeah, I was a fucking moron.
Now, they always talk about the Lower East Side, how wild it was. It was really that wild?
It was pretty nasty. Not every street, but, you know, you go to the wrong place the wrong time of day, it can be nasty. And especially, you know, if you look like a chicken, well, then you were getting fried. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
It's like, you know, if you were down there and they knew they could take you, you got took. You had to watch yourself, and you had to, you know, just pay attention to what was going on, and know how to run when need be. but at the same time, as long as you minded your P's and Q's, you could be okay.
Yeah,
because there were enough freaks down there as well that watched out for each other. You know
so you're
I mean?
Kind of like rolling with your own kind also.
Yeah, you roll with your own kind. And then, but then there was others. There were artists down there. There was musicians from every different type of music. you had the immigrants, the Ukrainians and the Polish and whoever else. And then you had the Puerto Ricans and you had the gangs. And then you had the, what I honestly fucking miss about missing New York City, and I'm not even kidding when I say this, packs of fucking 7 foot tall transvestites.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of them back then.
Oh, yeah, because they were all like, you know, it was like the, before the club kid thing. So it was like, you know, they were walking around. They would walk around in gangs, practically. And like, and a gang today, for them, it could be like 2, 3, 4 of them. You know what I'm saying?
And they had the big shoes then.
Yeah, big shoes, 7 feet tall, fucking wigs, the makeup, the whole bit. And they would, if you fuck with them, they would kick your ass.
Oh, shit. You began to scratch with those nails, hit with purses.
Oh, they everything. Would beat the shit out of you. You know, yeah. they would fuck you up. And I miss that about New York. Every time I go to the city, if I'm down in the neighborhood and I see a fucking like a club kitty kind of a big, if I see a big tall transvestite they walk down the street, I applaud. I'm happy to see them.
You gotta start a thing and bring it back.
Exactly. Bring the freak flag back to New York, the way that it was.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, man. You know, New York at the moment is kind of grubby, though. It's getting grubby again. I'll give it that.
Yeah, it's getting grubby, but it's boring.
Yeah, it don't have that vibe, but like the cool vibe. It just has the dirty vibe, like the grubby
it's
vibe.
Dirty. Everybody talks about, you know, they miss old New York, but then it's like, okay, well, here it is. And they're like, ah, yeah. But it's like, well, honestly, what you said is like you miss old New York rent.
Yeah, for real.
You know? That's
so did you ever live in the city or not?
Not really lived. I mean, I stayed with girlfriends. I stayed with a couple of friends. I couch surfed. Yeah. I never had my own apartment in the city.
But from Yonkers to Lower East Side, that's kind of a mission, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I would take the 20 bus on Palmer Road and Central Avenue. I would take the 20 bus to Woodlawn, which was the terminal for the number 4 train. And then I'd take the 4 train into the city where I would usually change for the 6. And get off either Union Square or Bleecker Street or whatever.
Woodlawn, you ever go to a bar called Rory Dolan's?
I was a kid. I couldn't even.
It's still there now. It's still there. Irish spot. Yeah, good.
Yeah, I don't. I lived around there briefly.
Yeah.
Like when my parents moved back to the Yankees, I was in the 11th grade. So I stayed. They wanted me to finish out the 11th grade at Yankees. So I stayed with my buddy Josh, who was in my first band. So needless to say, I didn't go to school. So, and that was in 84. Mm. So the neighborhood up there it was a little touchy up there too as well.
Yeah, I bet.
But you know, like I said, as long as you didn't act like a jerk, you pretty much you were okay. And sometimes they fuck with you if people got bored, they'd fuck with you. But you know,
for the most part, you described your personality as kind of like, you know, a little antisocial kind of vibe. Did you have any issues with other people, other kids in the scene at all? Did they not understand you, not get you, or was it pretty good?
Not really, because back then, before I was in the band, I didn't really talk to a lot of people. Even some people who I wound up talking to later, they didn't think I knew how to talk. Oh, they thought that I was maybe I was a foreigner, maybe I was one of the Russian or the Polish kids or some shit like that. They were around, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't really talk to people. I would talk to the guys in the Nihilistics, the few friends that I had. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't very social. It wasn't until maybe the year before she had Terror. Once they started going out and getting laid,
that's came what out I of your shell you. A little bit then.
Yeah, I started coming out of my shell more, and I started talking and going out, and, you know, people said, oh, well, you do talk.
Now, being like that, was it hard to be a front man?
I never had a problem with it.
That was just a whole different experience then, like a front man.
Gotcha. I just went out and did it.
You were more comfortable with that than other social situation.
I guess so. Yeah. Never really thought about it. I guess so. I was like, fuck it. This is what I want to do. I'm going to do it. And if I stink, I stink. I won't do it no more.
Now, when Sheer Terror starts and you come out, like I said, you have, compared to the other vocals of the time of the bands going on in that area, you have a more, I mean, you know, the lower kind of guttural kind of vocals, which is like, you know, that's that's the standard now, you know. And how was that taken by the rest of the scene? Was it because it, like you said, you discharged, you definitely a couple bands here and there with that style, but not really many that I could think of.
I mean, discharge, yeah, negative approach, kind
of. Yeah, know, negative approach a little bit, definitely, yeah.
But I would, I don't know, I mean, people dug it, I guess, you know what I mean? People dug it, they liked it, you know what I mean? And then when the metal, I mean, I was never a metalhead, you know, like that. I never, I was, that was never my thing.
Yeah.
That was like Blake. Blake, he was all in like in some of the early shit, like Celtic Frost and everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And he turned me on to them. To this day, I don't even own Celtic Frost record because I never had to buy one because I was always listening to it in Blake's car. You know, I liked them. I thought they were cool.
Yeah.
But I just never bought the record. And he would say, like, the damn, I like them and some of the other bands. I can't remember what sound of them. I didn't like, oh, I can't remember these bands. They started with D. They started with like, No Destruction and all these other bands like that. And some of that I just was, oh, this is terrible. Wow, nah, this is great. I was like, okay, whatever. Yeah.
Because Sheer Terror does kind of get the, it gets the kind of like, it's put into the category of like the early mix of metal. Yeah. And,
yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I can see that. I'm not going to say, you know, that it's not, but it wasn't a concerted effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like, well, we should take this and that. It was more like, this is what Blake was listening to, and he just started writing kind of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, well, let's try mixing this, or we'll do that and do that. It was never really a concerted effort at all. It was just something that naturally happened. And, I mean, it was cool. Like I said, I was never a metalhead, but I like, you know, I'm very picky with my metal stuff, you know, what I listen to, what I like and everything. Even to this day. But, you know, it was all right. Somebody, I don't know who the hell it was. I read it online, either on in some review or some shit. I don't remember what the hell it was. Somebody, what did they call us? The Guido Celtic Frost.
Oh, wow. That's great. You know what? In some of the album photos, yeah, you guys kind of have a Guido vibe in it. You know what I mean? You got the guinea tees on and stuff. The pool hall.
I thought that was funny. The Guido.
That is vibe. Good. That is a good vibe. I like that. It's good. Good description. Now, when it comes to the lyrics, what's the deal? Is it always you? Was it always you from the beginning?
Yeah. It was always me. I was like writing. I was always a big reader. You know, so I was a kid and everything, voice reader, whatnot. And I just always liked a good lyric or whatnot, a good love gone wrong kind of song, even when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always, you know, I appreciated lyrics and I appreciated writing. And it was always something, you know, that I wanted to do. And, you know, I hope I got better as I got older. And, you know, it's still something that's very important to me. I drive myself crazy trying to write lyrics. Mm-hmm. I can't just put out crap just because it rhymes.
Yeah.
Or just because, oh, this fits. No, I got to be really happy with it. And otherwise, it drives me crazy, you know.
Yeah, you always have cool lyrics. And ask people that are, like, the more in-depth with their lyrics, like, what do you do? Is it the lyrics first, or do you need a melody and a song, or at least a riff first?
A lot of the times I'm writing to the music because I'll write stuff here and there. Right now I'm suffering from a severe writer's block, and it's driving me fucking crazy. I'll have stuff I have written, it just comes out of me and I write it, and some of it's good, some of it whatever, but a lot of times it never sees the light of day. Like, I'll go back to it sometimes, and I'm like, okay, maybe I could use one line for a song. But then, because the way that my insane brain works, I'm like, no, that's cheating. You got to write something new.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's crazy. Cheating. Come on.
Yeah, it's stupid. It makes absolutely no sense.
It's cheating. It's like, what are you stealing from yourself? Come on.
Exactly. It makes absolutely no sense, and I drive myself fucking crazy. I had so much shit written. And don't get me wrong, not all of it was good, but I had books. I had like a stack of notebooks, and I burned them all about 2 years ago.
On purpose?
Yeah, I put them all in a burn barrel in the yard here at the house.
What the hell, for some kind of ritual? What the fuck did you do that for?
I guess I felt very relieved afterwards because I've been lugging these things around for fucking years and not doing anything with them. Oh, and I was like, you know,
you should have gave them to somebody. Said, so hold these for me just in case.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of out of your mind or elsewhere. But I mean, damn, you don't think now like what was in there? There might have been some gold in there.
I flipped through and I saw a couple of things here and there that were okay. That I don't, and some of it was good, but a lot of it was like, I mean, if it didn't do anything for me back then, it's not, well, who's to say it's going to do anything for me now?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
So.
And if you're the kind of guy, if you need the melody first or a song that, you know, then.
It helps sometimes. It helps sometimes because then I'll tell you, I like to be able to hum the song in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I like to be able to hear, like, you know, whatever it is, even if I'm wind up, you know, growling over it.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the kind of way you do your vocals. It's almost like it's like a its own melodic signature that people, even if you don't know the words right off the bat, you could hum the melody of the vocals.
That's what makes a song a song.
Yeah, and a lot of hardcore though, you know, people don't do that. It's just like da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like typewriter style lyrics, you know.
And like a lot of like the beat down like stuff that's really popular now and I mean, not to, you know, put down these kids or whatever, or whoever they are. I mean, whatever makes them happy, good for them. And I hope everybody makes $1 million. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, it's not for me, but I'm always like watching some of these bands and they go up there and the first thing out of the guy's mouth is, and it's like, well, maybe public speaking wasn't for you.
No, that's true. That's definitely. And how about any standout bands to you at this point? Younger, newer bands or not really? You keep an eye out because you're on the road. You see what's going on.
Yeah. Right now, I'm digging a lot of the stuff coming out of Pittsburgh.
Mm.
There's a band called Illiterates.
Yeah, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, they're like hardcore punk. I just last week got in the mail another band from Pittsburgh called Speed Plans. And their record is fucking brutal.
Speed Plans. Wow, I gotta check that out. I haven't heard that.
The record called "The Statues of God." It's fucking brutal.
Like, oh, that's old a great style, title.
Yeah, old style hardcore punk. You know what I mean? Dirty, rough recording, fast, angry. It's fucking everything you want in hardcore.
You know, Pittsburgh's always been good for stuff like that.
Yeah, it has. It has been. There's a lot, always like Submachine and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatnot, and then you got my boy Oyo down there, and all whatever pants he's playing is always good. Like, his band, he's got now Complete Fucker, he's singing for. They were fucking great. They're a great fucking band.
Nice.
And Pittsburgh's put on a lot of good stuff. I mean, I'll check out stuff here and there. You know what? What's been helping me, honestly, to keep in touch with like a lot of stuff coming out is Bandcamp.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Right? It's a pretty good source.
Yeah, and I got fine stuff, and like I don't buy records. I've been buying. I got the Speed Plans. I got the Illiterates record. A couple of like, you know, I like a lot of like, you know, like some of the newer street punk or oi stuff. Some there are some good bands out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then some like more like I don't know if you want to call it like new wavy type or whatever. I don't know, almost like dancey type shit, but. The songs, it's gotta have a song that like that captures my attention, that brings me in, and then I'll buy the fucking record. I'll send away for it. I'll buy it online. You know what I mean? Send away for it. Just that old name right there. Send away for it.
You expose yourself when you say that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll send away for the 8-track.
You know what I'm saying?
No, that's good. Yeah, that's so you got your ear to the street. You know what's going on.
I try to keep up with it. And I hear a lot of great stuff. I hear a lot of stuff like whatever. But I hear a lot of really good shit. And if I like, I'll buy it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go to check it out if they come into town or if we're coming into their town. I try to get them on the bill, maybe. You know.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, there is a lot of stuff out there. I'm sure I'm missing out on a lot of stuff as well. But it's like. I know what I like, but I'm not going to be like everything else sucks because I don't like it. No, it's just not for me. And I don't have to listen to it because there's plenty of other stuff out there to listen to.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's. You know? I mean, there's so much stuff out now. That's.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy, and then that's good, and that's also kind of bad too sometimes.
Yeah. Now, how about like in you know the formation of Sheer Terror, and the scene, and did you have that feeling back then that it was too saturated back then, or did it feel like this is just enough? Was being in a band more like exclusive? Were there less bands so they would get more attention, or was it the same kind of situation?
When we started out, and then when we, I guess it had to be around 85, we started playing out more. Then I went out to San Francisco for a while, hanging out with a bunch of jerk-offs out there and doing stupid shit. And really stupid shit. Mm. And then when I came back, around 86, 87, we started playing out more. So, and this is like when like a lot of the older bands or whatever started getting signed or putting out records. But like all these bands, they started going metal. They started playing metal, like AF.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like me and Roger were living in a garage, in an unheated, no water garage with me, him, and like eight pit bulls in Staten Island when they were doing that second LP. And
you weren't feeling it. You didn't like it?
Nah, he was like playing me stuff. I'm like, why are you playing this metal stuff? And he was like, well, the metalheads like us. I was like, yeah, well, the metalheads like it because they never heard hardcore before.
Mm.
They're not listening to one. Oh, wow, these guys could probably be a good metal band if they tried. You know?
Mm. Yeah, and
yeah. It bothered me. I really don't like that second LP at all. I don't. Some people love that record. I don't like it at all.
My favorite is One Voice, so you probably hate that one.
You know what? I think I have it on cassette. I'm not even sure. I might even listen to it once.
If you're a lyric guy, though, I think you might appreciate One Voice. I had the best AF lyrics, had strong lyrics.
Yeah.
But definitely a metal-leaning release.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's it. I mean, for a while there, Roger, I used to make fun of him. I was like, because it's like, you know, okay, you were doing the metal thing, and then like, all right, then you broke up, boy, you come back, and now you want to be Rancid, and now you're trying to be Hatebreed, and now you're doing. I was like, when's the Polka record coming out? Like, and all of a sudden that gets
Polka. So, yeah, you know what? I always heard about Roger when he was living in Staten Island. You were that? That's what you?
Well, he had the house after that.
Uh huh.
But before he had the house, in like 85, this had to be 86. 85, 86, 86, I guess. They were in between tours or whatever. They were writing that record, whatever the fuck they were doing. I don't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of ours used to breed pit bulls. And they had the one woman, her uncle, I think it was her uncle, I think, he had a garage in Staten Island. It used to be a tire garage, like for tires. They changed tires, or they fixed tires, repaired tires, sold tires, whatever the fuck they did.
Like used tire place.
I guess. I don't really know.
Yeah, okay.
And she got a hold of the building, and they kept the dogs there. We boarded it up the back, or they boarded it up the back. And they had about eight pit bulls, you know, chained up there in house. You know, they had houses for me, something like that. You know, dog houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, between me and Roger and, Billy Psycho was doing it first. He was taking care of those. He'd go there every day, feed them, water them, change the beddings, whatever they needed to do, clean up after them, blah, 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 you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I would go and meet Billy there sometimes, and we get a six-pack of beer. After he cleaned up the dogs, we get a six-pack of beer and go upstairs and watch Thundercats. So, eventually, I was in between apartments. Well, I didn't even have an apartment at the time. My mother finally moved to another place, and there was no room for me. So I needed a place to live, pretty much. Or I could have stayed on that couch, but I didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
So they said I could stay there, and Roger was staying there, too, at the time. And it was dead of winter, no fucking heat, no running water, no bathroom.
Damn.
Yeah. And me and him.
How long did that last?
Couple of months.
That's rough living.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, I had an aunt that lived nearby, so I would go to her house to take showers and stuff.
Yeah.
And everything. And then, like, I got a job fucking all the way out in Jamaica, Queens, at a fucking distributor for a while. I just got travel. That was really stupid. And so whatever, I was working and Roger was doing his bit or whatever. It was like, you know, coming home and, you know, honey, I'm home. And there's Roger. Hey, hello.
That's cool, though. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. No, we had some good times in there, freezing our balls off and stuff. And when he got attacked by the one dog and I had to bring him to the hospital.
Oh, yeah? He got fucked up a little bit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was trying to show. We had these two dogs. They hated each other. He was trying to show it off to this one asshole who lived next door or whatever, to how much they hate each other. And the one dog was fucking totally crazy. We had to put this dog down, and it took us hours with the vet to put this dog. That's another story. But yeah, this dog was nuts.
Yeah.
And like something happened with them, and the dog turned around and it lunged and it grabbed Roger. And he had to play CBs then, like a couple of days later or the week later. There's a video of him. He's got his arm in a sling.
Holy shit.
Yeah, the dog ripped his arm up pretty bad. It bit his arm and all this shit. And he was a mess. I had to take him to the hospital, and I'm waiting for him, and I had to bring him back to the place, and he's all on painkillers.
And wow.
He was a fucking mess. He got attacked by the dog, so he's all bandaged up on his arm. He just had the tattoo of the spider removed from his neck, so he had a bandage on his neck there, and then he got a sty in his eyeball.
Oh, my God. He looked like a deranged maniac.
Oh, player. God, he looked like a fucking, he looked the worst hobo you ever saw in your life. And his hair was all long by then, like he grew it out.
What a mess. That's wild, man. So did Sheer Terror and AF ever tour together around that time?
Nah, we never really, we played together literally a handful of times. And it wasn't until much later.
Why is that, you think?
I don't know. I never asked him. I was never one to be like, hey, get a show. Or, hey, we should do show. I was never that guy.
Damn, fucking Roger. Do the right thing. What's wrong with you? The guy saved your life from that dog. This how you repay him?
I was just never that guy to be up anybody's ass to ask them about shows and stuff like that. If they offered and we could do it, okay, great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But don't offer. And then all of a sudden nothing happens. Because then it's like, don't blow smoke up my ass.
Yeah,
I understand. Yeah. You're in a band. There's a lot of bands that want to play with you. I don't expect to be at the top of the list. I get it. I get it. And I'm not mad at you. You know? Mm-hmm. But I was never one to be like, hey, we should do shows. Hey, you, what you do? Hey, like, I was never that guy.
Yeah, I can't picture you being like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, if they offered and we could do it, all right, great. Fantastic.
But was there any bands in particular around then that were helping Sheer Terror out a little bit, or not really?
Not particularly. I mean, you know, we were friends with a lot of bands. I mean, we were playing with Prong here in X. We were friends with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Tommy worked with us on the first record and whatnot. So Prong, maybe, I guess you could say.
I remember Prong, yeah. Beg to Differ, right?
Yeah, but before that,
yeah, that's what I remember him at, though, when that hit out.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, we were friends with those guys. We would play out with them a lot and everything, but not really. I mean, I knew everybody, but like I said, I was never up anybody's ass. And then, like, I would get tired. I would get, you know, just I'd stay home a lot or whatever. I'm like, I don't want to go see these bands. I don't like to do something planned. I don't like the way that the scene was going with the whole, then when the youth crew thing happened, it wasn't the fact that these kids were straight edge that bothered me. Hey, more power to you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Stay clean, all that, good for you. I'm happy for you. I didn't like the attitudes.
Kind of a elitist vibe?
Yeah, I got a lot of that from a lot of those guys.
Yeah, that's how I
picked. Not all of them, but a lot of them, you know? Mm-hmm. And now, of course, you know, I see them now. They're like, hey, Paulie. And I'm like, you know, I'm old friends. And like, I'm friends with some of these guys now. I'll talk to them and stuff like that. But I'm like, motherfucker, you know, 30 years ago, you wouldn't even look me in the eye. You know, it's like, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
It's kind of weird. You know, not all of them, but a lot of them. Yeah, but now they're like, oh, Paulie. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And everything's fine. But I ain't mad at nobody. I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Ray was never like that. Ray Capo, we always cordial to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Always very cordial to each other.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I mean, we didn't always agree with each other, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but we were always very cordial with each other. We were never jerks to each other.
And that was in the era of the were you ever mixed up in that Krishna stuff or
nah? Nah, not at all. I was never.
How do you view that? Because to me, that seems like it seems crazy to me. Like I don't.
Yeah, know. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. You know, I mean, I
but that was very big back then, no?
Yeah, well, it became like a fad. It came like a very popular thing then. Like, oh, well, look at me, I'm spiritual. But how many of those guys are still into that to this day?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot, but then there's some who they ain't wearing the beads no more. Or some of them guys fucking even, you know, that's what got me with a lot of them straight edge guys or these spiritual guys. A good deal of them anyway. When they broke edge or lost their spirituality, lost their train ride, they went deep.
They went hard. They went off hard.
They booting dope and all this shit, like stuff I would never do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I never stuck a needle in my fucking arm. I snorted dope, and I ain't proud of it. I did it twice. I didn't like it. This way, I don't do it. And so I was like, nope, no, not for me. I tried it. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these guys went fucking hard into that shit. So that's, it's like, I don't know if it's because they thought they had to make up for lost time, or who the hell knows? I don't
So in that era, when you got the youth crew stuff popping off, there was like a little bit of a separation?
Oh, yeah, big time, big time. They didn't want nothing to do with us. And we didn't.
And when you say us, you mean Sheer Terror? Sheer Terror?
Pretty much Sheer Terror, because we pretty much stayed by ourselves a lot.
And maybe because Sheer Terror is like openly kind of negative, like dark, a darker band.
Well, negative so. Because if we didn't like something, we were honest about it. We weren't going to pull smoke up your ass. If we thought you were full of shit, we'll tell you, you're full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people took that as negativity. Said, I'm negative, I'm just being honest with you. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, it's great. Oh, yeah, good luck. No. I mean, nowadays, I really just don't give a shit. It's like, yeah, do what you got to do. Leave me alone. But we were just honest. We weren't being negative just to be negative. You know, it weren't. I was never into the hating just for hate's sake.
Yeah.
You know, I was into hating because it was fun. For lack of a better term, I had fun with my hate.
Fun to hate.
You know, I had fun with my hate. I was a jerk, and I'd act like a jerk. I'd say, but you know, it's like when I was a kid. Like when I was, like I said, when I was out in San Francisco, I was hanging out with your garden variety Nazi skinheads out there.
Yeah.
And, you know,
really? In San Fran?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was big out there.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they were, you know, for the most part, idiots. Mm-hmm. But I was 17 years old and getting drunk. And being an asshole, and everybody hated my guts. I didn't give a shit about the politics. People are like, what are you, white power? Yeah. You know why I said yeah? To make them go away.
Yeah.
To make them hate me. I didn't give a shit. I'm going home listening to fucking reggae records and shit, you know, like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just wanted to be hated. I wanted to be left alone. I wanted to be hated. So I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I like getting drunk, and I liked fighting.
Mm.
And that's why I was into all that shit. I didn't give a fuck about the politics. When all of a sudden that shit got serious and people said, oh, we got to start dressing normal and we got to do, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. You know? It's like, you're serious now? It's like, I know you. Get the fuck out of here.
Now, yeah, you have like, and all, you know, when you play live, you have the banter in between songs. That's one of the things Sheer Terror is known for. Was it always like that from the beginning or did that develop?
It developed. I mean, I would like talk here and there and say whatever's on my mind, if not mine. But then that developed over time.
Mm-hmm.
It developed over time. I was like, well, I'm up here. I already got, you know, I got the microphone. I got something on my mind. I want to talk about it. And I do realize the more I drink, the more I talk shit. And I gotta watch myself sometimes because sometimes I'll go on a tangent and, you know, I got to cut it short a little bit.
Yeah. But, have any band members ever been like against it or trying to stop you a little here and there if they think you're going a little too wild or not?
Not really. Sometimes they'd be like, okay, you know, they're like, all right. And they were just like, oh, I got to go tune my guitar.
They know it's part of the deal. That's kind of what.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going up there talking shit and having a good time. I'm trying to get a rile out of somebody. I'm trying to, like, you know, have fun. I'm not going up there trying to fucking. That's the big mistake. A lot of people think I'm like this, and it makes me like, oh, you miserable bastard. I'm not miserable at all. I'm actually a very happy guy. I like to laugh. Me and my wife to be here in the house. Well, we bust each other's balls all day, making fun of each other. We have a lot of fun in this house.
Yeah,
you know, and we there is a lot of laughter in this house. You know, and I'm a happy drunk. You know.
Yeah, you always seem like a good time when I see you around.
Yeah, I'm a happy drunk. I like to have a good time and shit, and I like to laugh. And I go up there and I'll say my shit or whatever, and I like to bust balls, and I'm having fun. I'm not going up there really trying to insult anybody or hurt anybody's fucking feelings unless they fucking really deserve it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm angry about something, you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to go up there to be a dick just for the sake of being a dick, just for the, like, so and people walk away going, oh, my God, did you hear what he said? You know?
Yeah.
That's just bullshit.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever said something during a rant, you know, maybe had a little too much to drink that you regretted? You maybe had to apologize later on to somebody in particular.
Yes, you felt bad
or something.
Yeah, sure. That's happened. And I've got to those people. And I've, you know what? I was whatever in whatever mood, and I brought you up about a certain thing. And they said something, and I apologize because I have no problem. Like what happened with Sick of It All, I say something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've been friends with those guys for years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love those guys. Mm-hmm. Love those guys. And I said something about them, like, you know, oh, you know, they don't like to get the crowd angry or the crowd mad or some shit like that. I said something stupid, whatever. I just pulled their name out of a hat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On stage, and I put it up, and then afterwards I felt like a dick, and I didn't think about it for years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally, like, about two years ago, whatever, I called Lou. I was like, you know what? I said something a while ago. Oh, you heard about that? And I explained the situation. I was like, you know what? I'm sorry that I said that. And he's like, nah, it's all right. You know, whatever. We know you and whatever. And I was like, yeah, I know, but that was a dick move. And I don't know. I just pulled you guys out of thin air.
What a guy. Know? That's good. That's nice thing you did that, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm really, if I hurt somebody's feelings who I care about, or if I say something, I don't know, I was out of line, I'll admit to it. Mm. No, I'm not perfect by no means. I'm as fallible as the next guy.
Yeah, you did one joke one time when I saw you in Chicago that was incredible. It was about I forget how it went, but it was about a dog. It was like based around a dog and a talking dog.
Oh, the talking dog. Yeah.
And the joke went on that so long that it was getting, I like that kind of stuff. Like just like the troll, like the people, you know what I mean? It went on so long that like people were like, what? And then when the end hit, I was like, oh my, that was like, that was brilliance, man. I'm glad I forgot the joke because I hope one day I see it again and you do the joke again.
I told that joke in the Philippines, not the Philippines. Right over there when we were over in Southeast Asia,
Indonesia.
It's a very clean city now.
Mm.
I think it was
Singapore.
Singapore, thank you. Yeah. Yes.
When you said clean, I know they'll whip your ass if you spit gum out over there. Yeah.
I told that joke because they were doing something on stage, something that one of the answers wasn't working or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So before we played, and it was a very big crowd to begin with, but I told that joke before we went on, and to say the laughter was sparse would be being kind.
Yeah. That's wild because it might be a little language barrier too. On top of it.
Yeah, but that's all right, you know.
And what? So you know, you guys got that. You got that unique deal that you do with the banter, sheer terror, the sound, everything. What is like? What's the hot spots for you guys? Is there certain cities that you know?
You know, it's hard to say these days because things change so friggin' much.
Mm.
I mean, I always love playing Berlin.
Yeah. Okay.
I love Berlin. It's one of my favorite cities in the world.
Great place. Yeah.
I love Berlin to death. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. I have some of my favorite people in the world to live there.
Mm-hmm.
Berlin's good. Belgium, like Antwerp and around there, is usually good. And I know a lot of great people there as well. Those shows there are usually fun.
Mm-hmm.
So Albany used to be great. But now it's beat down.
And what era? Like the QE2 era? Like
QE2. Saratoga Winners.
Okay, yeah, all right, yep.
For that shit, yay. Saratoga Winners and shit like that, and that was a big shit in Tarrytown. Now it's all beatdown shit. Now we go up there, we do okay, but not like it used to be. Mm. And it's also, you also got to realize, our crowd's getting older. Our crowd is getting older, and they don't always leave the house as much as they can, or as much as they should, or if they can.
Yeah,
and I get it, but it's like, you know, I'm not asking you to throw your life away or leave your job or get fucked up with me till 5 o'clock in the morning or whatever. You come by, you see the band, you buy a shirt if you want, and then you go home.
Yep.
I'm not asking you to stay the night. You know, it's, whatever. If you can do that, you go home, and that's fantastic.
Now, a while ago, you had that release on Reaper Records, right? A while ago.
Yeah, the LP, that's like 7-8 years now, or whatever.
Yeah, and that's a minute ago. But did you see any kind of any movement with the bass that comes to see you after a release like that? Because that was like the hot label at the moment.
Yeah, no, somebody a younger crowd or whatever's there. You know, they definitely were showing up. They were coming out. That record definitely did well.
I think we did
a good job with that record.
That was a real cool release, yeah.
Thank you, and you know, and definitely, yeah, you know, and some of the young kids come out and see us. You know, we are, you know, I mean, because it's, you know, changing. Of course, it has to, you know.
Yeah,
and so, you know, you need the kids, and they're coming out, and it's always good to see them. It's cool, you know. Sometimes I don't expect it because, you know, I'm older and I'm not trying to cater to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, because I see some of these older bands or somebody like bands like, you know, my age or whatever, my peers, not all of them, but some of them. And it's like almost like they're trying to cater to these kids. And I think if anything, it's a little insulting because it's like, you know, you just come to courses as like, you know, the creepy uncle who showed up at, you know, their junior prom. You know? It's like that. Stay home.
Yeah, I think when kids see a band like Sheer Terror or Negative Approach, like they want Sheer Terror and Negative Approach, like they want that mix at the show. You know, they want the vibe. Like, you know,
yeah, no, exactly. And it's always good to see the young kids doing it. Yeah. I mean, you know, you need it. It's a young man's game, and I get that. I completely understand it. And that's why, you know, with the Black and Blue Bowl this year, I'm glad to see a lot of young bands on that. That it's not the same old, same old.
Yeah, you know, it did have a whole a different kind of vibe to it when I saw that lineup.
Yeah, and I'm very happy to see that. It's about time.
Yeah.
It's about time because you need that. You need that. Yeah. And not only that, I mean, and even like the bands that they have on that, there's even another completely different crowd you could have got as well, you know?
Yeah.
With some of like these other hardcore bands, the ones that were doing more like the hardcore punk type of shit, like, you know, away more and more away from like the metal-y type of shit or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's big, too. You could have had like a whole nother crowd, which is good. That's the way it should be. There should be. I mean, everybody's fantasy to see everything all mixed together and everybody's having a great time and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, if it happens, it happens. But, you know, you can't expect everybody to get all like everything.
Yeah, for the most part, you need some kind of sequence on the show. Yeah,
as long as the people aren't dicks to each other,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. You know, let them. You guys are there. We're here. You guys, what if I may come? Hey, maybe I'll show up and come see you. But you know what I mean. And that's fine. That's fine. That's the way it should be. You know what I mean? I mean, that's how I grew up. Going to see so many different fucking bands and stuff like that. Like, but I, you know, I never really was one to go to concerts, like big shows, big, you know. So I get a nerve when there's too many people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's some shows and some shows I wish I would have went to, but like, you know, I was never like going to Madison Square Garden to see whoever, because most of the bands I wanted to see weren't playing there anyway. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the biggest shows I would go to see would be like, you know, Motorhead, you know what I mean? Something like that or whatever. But like, I wasn't going to see Judas Priest or Iron Maiden or any of that shit because that wasn't me.
You're a hardcore guy, straight up.
Yeah, I was a punk rock guy. I like punk rock. I like, you know, I like punk. I like punk rock. I like rock and roll and stuff. And that's what, like, you know, some of these bigger shows, like, you know, I you'll find me hiding in the back sometimes. It's like, you know, when the Misfits came out and they were doing the tour, good for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let them get it while they're still alive.
Make some fazools and have a nice show.
Exactly. Let them get the glory that the Ramones never got. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The Ramones had to go to a foreign country to get. The Ramones had to go to South America.
You a Ramones guy? Did you like the Ramones?
I love the Ramones. I love the Sex Pistols. I love all that shit.
I always get upset when people hate the Ramones. How do you hate the Ramones?
I love the Ramones, but it just sucks for them because, you know, they go to South America and they're playing for 30,000-40,000 fucking people.
Yep.
They come back here, they're playing fucking that dump in Jersey in Asbury Park.
Yeah, well, Stone Pony.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know? With the Misfits sort of thing, like, you know, would I pay $300 to go see them? No, I saw them back in the day, you know, Irving or the Ukrainian home and shit like that. And, you know, those shows were fine. They were so terrible back then. They were so loud and so, they were fun. But, you know, let them enjoy it while they're alive. They're good. Take the money and run, and there you go. You know what I mean? We're going to get mad at them. No, don't go see them. No, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you can't hate on that. And listen, people love that band. If people are paying to see you, then there's no argument. Like, okay, they did something right. Even if you think the band is awful, like people, I don't know.
You know, it's like, you know, I got like making fun of that band Turnstile.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know them. I never met them. They might be nice guys. Don't know. I don't really care. You know what I mean? It don't matter. I make fun of them. I say what I say about them. You think they really give a shit? You know, the money they're making right now, you think they give a shit about my fat ass saying about them? No!
They're making some serious money, those guys, man.
Yeah, they're making real serious money. I just don't think they're a hardcore band.
Yeah.
It's not hardcore. Whatever it is, I don't care for it. And it's like you can't play.
Now, did you ever hear the early stuff?
I probably not.
Because it was like kind of straight up hardcore.
Yeah, probably not.
The stuff that took them over the top, though. Yeah, it's like, to me, this sounds like, remember Jane's Addiction and those bands? Like, that's kind of the vibe it is.
I never liked Jane's Addiction. Yeah. I never got into
it. Yeah, to me, too. Like, to me, that was like the Enemy's music because I thought of that. Like, I equated that with, like, blonde hair girls on the beach, you know, drinking whatever they fucking drank. Sublime and, you know.
Yeah.
I hear a lot of that in their new stuff and, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but
I make fun of it because I don't think it's hardcore, but you know, it's like they got their crowd now and their crowd likes them.
Yeah.
That's why when I see like certain bands, I'm like, oh, they're getting huge now. They're getting big now. Maybe, you know, these kids are getting into hardcore now. They'll come check us out.
Hmm.
There isn't any trickle down economics in hardcore.
Yeah, you know? I'm not sure if that ever worked. You know.
You know what I'm saying? Because the kids who are going to see them are going to see them. They don't give a shit about your fucking beatdown band or your hardcore band. They don't care. They went to go see Turnstile and they spent $30 or $40 on a fucking shirt and they went home. That's what they care about.
And especially now, the way people find music, it's like they find, you know, it's...
Yeah, exactly.
They're listening to Turnstile and also some rapper.
Exactly.
Yeah, and some pop star.
They're not lifers. They're not like, now I'm into the scene. Now I'm going to go check out these men. No, they don't care. Yeah. They don't have the time or the patience for that. They go on their video playlist. They're like, oh, what's this? Click. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I went to get wings last night, and I was with this dude who I went to school with who doesn't know anything about anything. Mm. And somebody asked me about Turnstile and the dude was like, yo, I know Turnstile. And he doesn't, you know, he was never into anything. And I was like, how you know that? He's like, TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, shit.
There you go. Exactly.
Like it's TikTok. My kids are always showing me that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's all click. It's clicking playlists and this, that, and the other thing and memes and shit like that. That's what it is. It's easy for people. They don't have to go dig deep for it. If they got to go dig deep for something, they're like, I don't have the time or patience for that. You know, give it to me now. You know,
now who was the Turnstile before Turnstile to come out of the scene? Could you think of anybody?
What do you mean?
Like maybe a Life of Agony. They kind of, like to,
yeah.
a band that. They not never, to that they, level, but yeah.
Yeah, they're not down at that level. They
how about Biohazard?
Biohazard, yes, to an extent. I never really consider, I mean, I'm friends with the Biohazard guys, don't get me wrong. I never considered them a hardcore band.
Yeah.
They do, when they first started out, they sort of played hardcore-ish. You know, they were terrible. And they'll tell you that. But then they were more like groovy metal shit, groove metal, whatever. And then it would mix with their hip-hop thing. They had their own little thing going on, which is what they were. I was just so much a fan of that because it's just not for me.
Yeah. But they had the major label kind of hit and
MTV kind of went for it. They went for it, but it didn't stick.
Yeah.
It didn't stick. It didn't stick. You know, they tried, they done it, they were like, oh, we're gonna be you doing.
You know? Almost, yeah.
Almost. And it's like agony. You know, it's like, you know, they doing great, and then you know, especially in Europe and shit like that, where you know, Brendan. They
get
signed to this and then nothing.
Almost. And then, since we mentioned Biohazard, Life of Agony, we got to mention this other Brooklyn band. This is like one of my favorites of all time. I just want to see where you stand on it, what you think of them. Typo Negative.
I was a bigger Carnivore fan than Typo, but Pete was a friend of mine and I appreciated them.
They have that record, October Rust, which is, to me, it's like a masterpiece. Like
I have that on cassette for some reason. I know I didn't buy it, but I have it. Pete might even gave it to me. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I've never really listened to it. I should check that out.
I'm a big fan. How was Pete? Pete, good guy or what?
He was a great guy. He was a great guy. He was fun. He was
and he kind of personality, maybe similar to yours, from what I could tell.
Yeah, he was very, very sarcastic and very smart, but fun guy. He was a sweetheart. He really was. He really was to me, and he was a good guy, very good guy. I liked Pete a lot.
Yeah. I liked him a lot. Listen,
Playboy. You know, I appreciate them. I mean, I listen to a lot of their stuff, but like when it's on, it doesn't bother me. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Because that's a lot of stuff I never really looked into when it came out. So I'm like, oh, all right, cool. That's for you, and I appreciate it. You know, I totally appreciate it. I knew Josh, the keyboard player, as well, because he worked with Chiatera a lot. Well, our first couple with some of our demos, and he worked on the Old New Bar to Blue record with us. So Josh, I don't know if
that's cool.
And his dog, actually, his old dog Butch, is the bulldog that's on the cover of Ugly and Proud.
No way.
Yeah, that's Josh from Typo's dog.
Wow, that's great trivia right there.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to his house and had those pictures taken. When we used to go there.
That's a great looking dog.
Yeah, he was a big slobbering smelly. Yeah. He was great. When we would go there, we would like to record sometimes, whatever, when we were doing demos or whatever. And like the studio was set up on the second floor of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went downstairs, there was the living room and the kitchen and stuff like that. And that's where the dog stayed, really, you know? And then in the basement, he had the studio set up where the band's playing, you know? And all the
cables. So his dog had his own floor of the house.
That's where the dog, he had that dog, and I believe he had a Great Dane as well.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Those
things are fucking huge.
Yeah, so we had two dogs, and they had the main floor of the house. And the studio was in the upstairs, and the bands played in the basement. And they had the cables going through the walls or whatever, you know?
That's cool.
So, and Josh, I'd be downstairs, they recorded, and then I'd be doing vocals downstairs in the basement. And Josh would come down and to fix something, and he'd go walk upstairs. You're like, come here, you gotta see this. And you look up to the stairs, on the top of the stairs, is this bulldog Butch. Staying there, wagging his tail, like he'd see me, he'd go and say, like, oh, we're gonna play.
Oh, nice.
Because I would go over there, every time I go over there, I would play with him.
Yeah.
So the dog would hear me yelling and singing in the basement, and he'd be sitting at the top of the stairs, like, we're gonna play soon.
That's great, man. I didn't realize the Type O connection there.
I knew that from the Carnivore days and then into the Type O thing. Oh, yeah. I was friends with those guys. You know,
I'm going to tell you, though, if you ever have time and you're ever in the mood, be by yourself and play that October Rush record.
I'll definitely check it out. I know I have it.
I mean, to me, it's like the fuck. It's Pink Floyd, The Wall. It's, you know, it's like it's that kind of fucking deal to me. But, you know, I'm just a simple guy.
I know I have it someplace. So, no, I'll definitely listen to it.
Yeah, but now you got a computer. You don't even need to have it. You know,
that's true. Yeah, exactly.
You're talking like if you come across it when you're digging it up. type it in Google, it'll play for you immediately.
Well, I still do. I got tons of records here. That's what I do. The 45s, the 10 inches, the 12 inches.
Are you a collector?
Oh, yeah, but I collect what I like. I collect what I play and what I listen to. I don't just collect stuff because it's rare.
Yeah.
I mean, I do have some rare and expensive stuff, but I listen to it. I like
it. What's the most expensive piece you got?
As far as I know right now, I don't really check the prices on some of these things or what they're going for. It's on some of them. Mm-hmm. But the most that I spent in recent times is probably about two, almost 3 years ago on what the label? Not the label. It's not going to matter what label. It's an old Soul 45. Eunice Collins at the Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely rare 45.
Yeah.
And, that was a little over $900.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's worth $900 or you paid $900?
It's probably worth more now, but yeah, that's how much I paid.
Damn, you're the real deal then, son.
You never see this record ever. Ever see it. It's a beautiful song. Beautiful song. At the Hotel, it's called. Eunice Collins.
What kind of music is that? Like,
it's soul.
Soul, okay.
I'm a big soul guy. Big soul.
Eunice is the guy's first name, or is it a woman?
It's a woman.
Eunice Collins. So that's a sister then, with a name like that.
Yeah, Eunice Collins.
Eunice Collins. Where's she from? Down south?
I want to say Chicago.
Oh, all right.
I want to say Chicago. It's funny because it's the song, and then the B side is kind of like an instrumental version of it.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a music teacher at a school, and it almost sounds like she's got like one of her students playing flute instead of vocals on the B side. It's like really disjointed and weird.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's really odd. It's really odd. It's the only record she ever did. The only record she ever did.
Wow. And to you, it stands out that much, that song.
It's a beautiful song. I love it. And you never find it. It came up on either disc, I think it was Discogs, I don't remember exactly. And I had to take a loan out with my girl. She had to loan me some of the money. I paid it back.
That's great. You're a real deal collector for your
phone. Well, I collect what I like. I gotta like it. I'm not gonna, there are a lot of, you know, especially with the soul stuff and everything like that, punk stuff as well, early punk stuff. But the soul record, I mean, there are a lot of very rare 45s, like there's like 30 known or 40 known, and it goes for thousands and thousands of dollars. Mm. But it sucks. It's not even a good song. And I'm not one.
So you're not interested in that?
No.
You gotta love the song and then appreciate the rarity at the same time.
If it's $300 record, that better be a $300 song.
Got you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I'll pay up if I want it, if it's good, if I like it. But I'm gonna play it. I'm gonna take care of it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not gonna throw it around the room or leave it laying around.
So you know? this definitely make it solidifies that you're a song guy.
Oh yeah, big time.
Now what song is it from Sheer Terror that, I mean, of course you don't want to talk about, you know, like, oh, this is a great song, but what Sheer Terror song is the most important to you?
That's really hard for me to say. Mm. Honestly. I've never really if anything, because I like the way it always comes across live,
mm-hmm.
Maybe Burning Time.
Burning Time. Mm. And is it just because of how it comes off live, or is it something deeper within?
It's an emotional song, and you know, I can live, it depends on what mood I'm in, you know, and it's got both, you know, the melodic and the growly in it, you know. Mm-hmm. You get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that one I enjoy. I enjoy. It's got a lot of emotion in that song. A lot of, I probably have to say that one. There might be others, but I don't really listen to, you know, my own song. I mean, when we record something new, whatever, yeah, then I'll throw it until I get sick of it. Because then, of course, I'm listening to it so I can memorize the fucking lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. And going over and over and over. It's a different kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and especially the way that I fucking write lyrics. You know, it's like, oh, God. I get a little verbose sometimes. Mm-hmm. and it's rough.
Yeah.
I wish I could do, like, I call them cheerleader lyrics. I wish I could do like Jamie Hatebreed lyrics.
Mm.
Like every line is just like the back of a t-shirt, you know?
Yeah.
I will not hold up. Like,
yeah.
I wish I could do that. You know? It's like a cheer. Everything's like a positive PowerPoint presentation of hardcore.
Yeah. So you're a lyric guy. So are you into any hip hop, any rap at all or not?
I like some.
Real strong lyrics for you to dig it, or just something else?
No, not really, because nobody beats the Biz as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, there you go, Biz Markie. There,
I loved, I adored him. I like Wu Tang. I like some Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
I like some of the Jay-Z stuff. I listen to all the time. I finally got a copy on vinyl. Somebody took Jay-Z, his rhymes, but they mixed it over Studio One reggae songs.
Wow.
It's really funny. You could find some of it online on like YouTube or whatever. Jay-Z.
Yeah, it comes off good.
Yo, it comes out amazing.
Wow. Amazing. That's cool.
Yeah, and I finally got a copy of it on vinyl.
Mm.
I paid like $30, $40 for it. I finally found a copy. It's a bootleg.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Wu-Tang one too. Wu-Tang meets King versus King Tubby, where they take the Wu-Tang and they mix it with the dub reggae from King Tubby.
Oh, stuff. Wow. That's cool, man.
It's really, really fucking good. Really, really good. So I like some of that stuff. B.I.G. Biggie was great.
Yeah. I was wondering if you'd be into hip hop at all. That's cool.
If it's good, it's good. You know what I mean? Yeah. If it's good, it's good. And if I had something to say, even if it was ridiculous, but it hit you in the right place, that's fine. You know what I mean? Not everything's got to be serious. Not everything's got to be fucking mean something. Sometimes it just can be funny, or sometimes it can just be ignorant.
Yeah.
You know?
It just sounds right.
Exactly. It hits you in the right fucking place. And that's why it's got to have soul.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, before I let you go, what is on the menu? What's on the plate for Sheer Terror?
Right now, we got 5 dates coming up in March with Slapshot. And it's mostly East Coast stuff. Well, we're going as far south as Baltimore, as far north as Portland, Maine. Doing 5 shows with that. We're working on some other shit right now. We'll go back to Europe.
Like working on booking stuff or writing stuff?
Both. Writing, because we have a new drummer who went to Europe with us last.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't play the last couple shows with us. But we have a new drummer, John Besser. He's an old friend of my guitarist. They grew up together. And he's playing drums with us now. So working with him on the set. And he'll be out with us with the Slapshot tour. We go back to Europe in the beginning of July. I'm not sure for how long. So wait, get that together. I got to talk to Mark from MAD about that.
Mm.
I was trying to like put shows together here and there right now, like what we can do, and trying to work on new material. And it's a little taxing right now because I'm having a major issue with inspiration. We're trying to find inspiration for writing and stuff like that. But they came up with a couple of songs, the new drummer and my guitarist, and they're good songs, but nothing's hitting me.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with the songs, but I'm just like not getting anything.
You been like that before? You've been through a little spell like that? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so. It hurts. It drives me up a fucking wall.
But when it comes.
I can't just climb over that wall. I wish I could just climb over that wall. And push it away, be like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
I wish. It ain't that fucking easy. It's fucking hard.
You got to wait it out.
It hurts. It hurts me a lot. It hurts my head. Mm. My head and my heart, because I'm trying. And I got stuff, that I want to get out. But it's just not, it's like, nah, this ain't it.
Wow.
And then sometimes after a while, it's just to feel like a job. And I'm like, I don't like that.
Gets frustrating, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it to feel like a job. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm also, going on the other side, I'm also starting to work, beginning to work on, as soon as they fucking get over this hump, a novel.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
and it's hard to really pinpoint what it's about. It's I have a couple of stories that I wrote over the years. They just came to me out of nowhere, and I just started writing. And it's basically the stories are about the relationship between a father and a daughter. But then I introduced in my mind, I introduced a mother. So it's about this family, but I'm trying to put together the stories, one, so they can, what's going to be the trajectory of this tale that I'm trying to tell here. You know, I mean, it's not going to be a bank heist or anything like that, but, you know, it can't just be them sitting there telling stories to each other either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's, I'm still working on that as soon as I get over this hump. But that's on the burner there. I have a working title, and I already know how it's going to end. If that's any help.
So you know the ending.
I pretty much know the ending.
And that inspired you to say, I'm going to write this by knowing the end. That's how it came to you?
No, I had these other stories written.
Okay. About
this father and daughter. I had them written for years. And like I said, it came out of nowhere. And so I was like, you know what? I should do something about it. Because everybody's putting out all these books. Everybody's putting out these fucking autobiographies. And I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because one, it's unnecessary. You know, there's already 50 million autobiographies out there. My story's my own. If you ask me a question, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. You want to hear something, I'll tell you about it. But I don't need to put a lot of this shit in writing, one. And some things, you just don't need to know. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Would be interesting, though. I would get that.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know.
How about this? A comic book autobiography, Paul Bearer. Yo. That could be.
A claymation film.
Oh, claymation. Like the fucking, what's that? Like the Christmas, who's that guy? The Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Well, like Rudolph or anything.
Yeah, but they, with that big white Christmas thing that was like, rawr, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I used to
love that shit, man. That's dope. Wow, you got shit going on, man.
No, like, I'm trying. It's going to get over this hump. I got to get over this hump. I want to work on this book. And there's no time frame for that, so it's like there's no rush.
Yeah, when it happens. You can't.
And then, you know, I'd like to do another sheer terror record. But like I said, I can't rush it. I can't push it, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, it's just going to be crap, and I don't want to do that.
Nah, it's got to be dope.
You know, it's like when we went to Europe, the last time we just did Europe, we did 23 shows in 23 days. And it was a little rough, but we did it, and we had a good time. You know, some shows are better than others, of course.
Yeah,
but it was weird. We did that for the hell of it. We did we did the first album in its entirety, Just Can't Hit Nothing in its entirety, and we did like maybe two or three songs in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we did that in its entirety, and it was easy to do it. Don't get me wrong, and a lot of people liked it because everybody wants to hear the first album, of course.
Classic, yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, it's like, after a while, it's like, you know, all right. And but it was almost like work sometimes, because it was like, all right, I don't want to just go out there and do the hits. I mean, you got it, because people want to hear it. And I'm not going to be a dick and be like, you know, all right, well, I'm not playing that just because I'm sick of playing it and you people want to hear it. No, these people are paying money to come see me. I'm going to push play some, but I'm also going to be playing other songs as well.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not just going to be a jukebox, but I'm also not going to be an asshole about it. You know, that's why I try anyway, unless I get too drunk and forget or whatever. But like, I like to put on a collared shirt or a clean shirt before we perform,
mm-hmm.
to go on stage. Like, people are paying good money to see us play. The least I could do is put on a clean shirt.
You look sharp. Yeah, come on.
You know what I mean? That's the least I could do.
Yeah. that's a mission nowadays, though. 23 shows, 23 days. That's.
Yeah, it was a little rough, but we did it. We did it. I mean, you know, like, I don't drink every night. Mm-hmm. I don't party every night. I drink when I want to. If I want to do something else stupid, I'll do it. But I don't need to. I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's never a need or a want. Well, no, it's never a need. It's never a need, rather. If I want to do something, I'll do it. But I don't need to get fucked up. Yeah. I don't need to eat meat every day. You know?
When it comes to playing, how are you completely sober compared to a little buzzed? Are you better one way or the other or not at all?
It really depends depends on my mood, because I play plenty of shows completely sober. Mm-hmm. I drink. I'm lucky, at home I drink maybe twice a week, but I don't get drunk. And I like my bourbons. I'm trying to become a bourbon nerd as I get older. So I'm collecting a lot of bourbons. Some of them more pricey than others, but really good stuff. But it's sipping whiskey. And I'll sit there and I'll sip. I'll have maybe two, maybe three. And then I go to bed, you know? But yeah. I'm sipping it. I'm enjoying it. I like the flavors and whatnot and the palate and whatnot. And I'm trying to become a bourbon nerd in my older age. Mm. But, you know, but I know if I'm out playing, if I'm on tour, it is work, because I have a show the next day. And I can't feel like, I'm not a kid anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in my 20s, I can get away with that. I'm 55 now. You know, I got to take a break.
You're really fucking over the next day, people, if you go too hard the night before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you sound good live, man. And the whole lineup you had at that last show I saw, it sounded great.
Thank you. No, I try. You know, I try to keep it. I remember one of the funniest things when we went to Europe a few years back. We played Berlin the night before, right? Mm-hmm. And, of course, we went out. All my buddies are in Berlin. We had a great time, blah, blah, blah. You know? That was great. We played Warsaw, Poland, the next day.
So Warsaw got a bad show.
No, it was a decent show.
I didn't know if you went too hard on Berlin.
No. Okay. They got a decent show, but I wasn't, I wasn't exactly bouncing off the walls or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But the guy, there's a guy in the crowd, and I swear to God, whoever this guy is, that every time we play Poland, I swear to Christ, I hear this guy's voice. Whoever he is. And he's like, we're up there, we're playing. I'm like, it's like, you might get better. Mind me, I'm going to be a little off tonight. You know, we played last night in Berlin, with my buddy. So we're going to get through this. We're going to be fine, you know? And the guy in the crowd is like, yeah, we know. You know, so we know. Drunk in Germany, hungover in Poland. Why never a drunk in Poland?
Yeah, you got to remember that next time. You got to save it for Poland.
You know? Especially if I'm half Polish. So
yeah.
When they found that out, the first time we played Poland, oh my God.
Oh, they fell in love with you, I bet. That's great. So what's the real last name? Is Beresky?
Yeah,
no,
sure.
No.
You'd be surprised how many people think that's my last name.
Really? They don't get it?
Nah, a lot of people say still don't get it.
Oh, wow.
They're like, what is that? Bear? What is that? German or something?
I'm my really? God. What is wrong with people, man? You know what's cool about Paul Bearer? It rhymes with sheer terror. Like, I don't know if that was intentional.
Mind disorder, but... yeah.
No, definitely. Come on. Paul Bearer, sheer terror.
Yeah. I don't know.
Jay-Z would use that. All right, man, I'm going to let you go. Yeah, listen, I really appreciate it, man. We want to get
this one. Thank you, Richie. This has been fun.
Yeah, dude. And when you got something going on, let's talk again.
I will, without a doubt.
When that writer block is over.
Without a doubt.
All right, my brother, I'll talk to you soon.
You take care.
You too. Take it easy.
Thanks a lot for listening. We really appreciate it. Post America Podcast will always be there for you. Don't forget that. Tune in next time for more fun with the boys. Until then, get your fucking ass out of here before I give you a smack, motherfucker! Who the fuck you think you is? This is Post America. You ain't shit, motherfucker!